Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal, Ozil. Marca Mesut Ozil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo, Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español, marca Nacho Monreal. Pim, pam, pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly evening to you.
Goodly evening to you too. Another evening one. What did people feel about that in the end? Did you get much feedback on it being an evening event?
I don't know. I think some people were happy they got the podcast on a Sunday evening. Some people said, no, I want to listen to the podcast on a Monday morning, as if somehow we had made listening to it on a Sunday evening mandatory.
Compulsory.
It's not. You can listen to it whenever you want. Regardless of when we record it, you can listen to it whenever you want. But I get it. It's, you know, perhaps it's tempting if it's there. And you're kind of go, well, will I listen now? Or will I leave it till the morning? But I'd like to listen now, but, oh, it's there. It's there. So I don't know. Look, we'll do it again. I'm going to put it out again tonight. People can have it on a Sunday night. And they can do with it what they will. They can listen to it on Sunday and again on Monday if they like. How about that?
Why not? And Tuesday too. Why stop there? Just
sure.
Keep going. Listen to a week. I mean, this might be a good one to listen to because it was a hell of an Arsenal performance.
It sure was. I mean, how was your Sunday? Would you sum up this as a good Sunday?
Well, look, ordinarily I don't like an early kickoff. You know, that's really early, isn't it? Midday for a football game. I mean, our American listeners would have been up, if they're on the West Coast, I don't know what hour, probably didn't bother going to bed.
They'd be staying awake, yeah.
Yeah, but ordinarily I wouldn't be a fan of it, but on this occasion, it was great because it just set me up to have a great day. From that point on, nothing could go wrong. I had a spring in my step.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. That's good. Yeah. I think it was a good day all round, even though it was a 12 o'clock kickoff. You're going, got a lot to do in the morning before the game is on. You know, you've got to walk the dogs, you got to have the breakfast, you got to do all this, that, and the other. And then the game is at 12, and it's like, whew. But, you know, it sets up the rest of the day very nicely. I roasted a chicken, and it was delicious.
Yeah, they often are.
They often are. This was a good chicken. Thank you, chicken, for giving your life for my deliciousness. I appreciate it. Yeah, go on.
Did I ever tell you that... Remember I said I met a pig a few weeks ago?
I vaguely remember that, yeah.
I said I met a pig.
Oh, yeah,
Someone from... A listener to the show, I can't remember their name, sorry, got in touch with me and sort of pleaded with me to turn vegetarian based on my encounter with the pig.
Oh.
He was like, I can see that there is part of you that feels bad for the pig, that you were eating pigs and met the pig. And they were like, there's a, you know, it was like when Luke sees a bit of good in Darth Vader. You know what I mean? It was like, it was that kind of thing. Anyway, I appreciated the message, but it hasn't worked. I still think chickens and pigs are delicious.
Okay, well, fair enough. Look, we're not here to preach the joys of meat eating or not meat eating or, you know, even veganism or whatever. We're not here to do any of that. We're here to talk about football and to enjoy what was a really, really good Arsenal performance. And I would say, James, you know, we've been kind of waiting for this performance to manifest itself, for this group of players to get it together, to be pretty good at the back and to be really good up front. And I think that's what we were today. I know we conceded a goal. It was a bit sloppy and everything else. But I think just in general terms, what we did to prevent Fulham from having the kind of chances that pretty much every other team has had this season is a progression. And we scored five excellent goals in the process away from home at 12 o'clock, a noon kickoff on a Sunday after playing at whatever time it was on a Thursday in Azerbaijan. I think that that constitutes a good day's work for Arsenal, for Unai Emery, for the players, and for all of us. We didn't do anything, but like, you know.
we watched it. You know, that was our part. Yeah. But I think that is probably the most satisfying performance of the season. When you take into account all those factors that you've mentioned, it was away from home. It was a London derby, albeit one of the friendlier ones that you might get. I just thought there was so much to like about it. And to be honest, the fact that we were pegged back at half time, which was really annoying at the time, but the way we responded to that in the second half, I mean, we shouldn't have been worried, I guess, because we've been such a second half team this season. But that second half that we then subsequently put together, you know, Fulham had their moments in the first half, but after the break, we were in complete control. And yeah, some of the football we played, some of the goals we scored, it was just a really terrific afternoon.
It really was. So tell me about team selection. Were you surprised by any of it?
I was. I was particularly surprised by the centre-backs, I think. I know Socrates played in the week, but I thought he would be back in for this game, perhaps alongside Rob Holding, but it was Holding and Mustafi, so that caught me a little off guard. And then going forward, you know, we weren't to know, I suppose, that Mesut Ozil was going to have a back spasm and not be available. But seeing Welbeck, Iwobi and Mkhitaryan in the starting 11 was a surprise. And then, of course, seeing the shape you know, that we lined up with was another one. I was expecting to see probably Danny Welbeck out wide and said he was up top in a front two.
Yeah, that was really quite interesting. I know he did drift wide. He was more drifty than Lacazette. Lacazette held his centre forward position, but Welbeck, you know, when I was looking at it at the start, I was going, is this 4-4-2? Could it be 4-4-2? Look where Welbeck is. Where exactly is he playing? You know, Wobie's on the left. Mkhitaryan's on the right. Hang on a minute. He's not playing Welbeck as a 10.
I had that thought as well.
It's kind of a 4-4-2. This is fantastic. And I think what's really interesting about the fact that he has gone that way, and he did confirm it afterwards. You know, he said this is the first time he played with a clear 4-4-2. You know, what's interesting is the fact that he played Lacazette and Welbeck rather than Lacazette and Aubameyang. Now, part of that might have been the fact that Aubameyang was sick during the week and maybe wasn't 100% in the build-up to the game. But, you know, everyone's going, how does he get Lacazette and Aubameyang in the same team? How does he do it? Well, he's not going to play 4-4-2, is he? He does. He plays 4-4-2 and he doesn't pick Aubameyang. Now, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's just a curiosity of the way the team was set up today.
Yeah, it was, but I thought that there was a kind of logic to it. I mean, I think Tim Stillman has written about this on Arseblog about Welbeck and Lacazette being a very natural partnership. They always seem to combine very well. And I know, you know, we think that of Aubameyang and Lacazette too, but, you know, it's hard to argue with Welbeck getting a start. I think he's been in pretty good form whenever he's been called upon, and likewise for the likes of Iwobi. So it was a starting 11 that made a lot of sense, but I had the same feeling as you of looking at it as a 4-4-2 and being so hesitant to confirm it was a 4-4-2 because I'm so conditioned to believe that that is a thing of the past, you know, especially as far as Arsenal are concerned. And it seemed to be really effective. And I suppose the reason that we're able to play 4-4-2 is that we played two midfielders who do protect, well, Xhaka has his issues, but who are seemingly deep-lying midfielders. You know, Xhaka and Torreira, they provided a lot of support for the back four and a decent kind of blockade in front of them. I suppose, like the old Arsenal teams which played 4-4-2 had, you know, Vieira and Petit, that kind of model. We had two of those types of central midfielders, and that, I suppose, is what contributed to Aaron Ramsey starting on the bench.
Yeah, I guess so. And, you know, Torreira, I thought, was particularly impressive. You know, I was looking at the stats after the game before I was doing up the player ratings for Arseblog News, and I was looking at Xhaka's defensive contribution. It was quite good, actually. You know, he made some tackles and interceptions and won his duels. But I thought there was something about Torreira that was really interesting today, in that he brings things to the midfield that we've been missing. There's an urgency to his game. He's snappy in the tackle. He's energetic. He chases people down. He's not afraid to actually get forward as well if he needs to. I think that's an interesting part of it as well. But, you know, you can just see how with a bit more time in the team and everything else, you know, he is, or has the potential anyway, to really grow into the kind of midfield player that we've been crying out for a long time.
Yeah, I thought he was excellent today. I thought this was his best performance in an Arsenal shirt. And there was There was loads to like about it. I agree he was tenacious, but he was also really good on the ball. There were a couple of instances where his close control in tight spaces was very impressive. I thought his positioning was good. I thought he was very physical. You know, he put in some meaty challenges and rode some meaty challenges too. He took a really bad knock at one point, actually, didn't he? There was a guy who, I think, made contact with his knee. It looked pretty nasty, but, you know, soldiered on through that and finished the game, I think, as one of our more advanced midfielders almost. Once Guendouzi came on, he was playing quite regularly in the final third, which shows he can kind of do it all, really. You know, he's very good technically. And yeah, this was a really good performance from him. And Xhaka, you know, in the early part of the season, there was a lot of criticism of Xhaka. He looked vulnerable. I thought he did look a lot more secure today with Torreira alongside him.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd agree. You know, it worked. It looks like a combination that has the possibility of working if they stick together and they get games together. I think, you know, there's the potential for that to really become the bedrock of our midfield. So, you know, we know that Xhaka is somebody who Emery really likes in terms of what he does with the ball, but, you know, he's also got some other duties, and I thought he did those pretty well. But, you know, you could look throughout the team today and say, yeah, he was good, he was good, he was good, he was good. Yeah, they were all good. I mean, there's no... Yeah. I don't really see anybody being singled out, or there's no need to single anybody out for any kind of criticism today because of the way that we responded. You know, that goal that you referred to as annoying in the build up just to the end of the first half anyway, I was looking at it going, oh, that is a bit annoying. But I didn't feel like... You know the way sometimes a goal can feel like a stab in the heart?
Yeah,
this did not feel like a stab in the heart. And I don't know if that was just misplaced optimism on my part, but it didn't feel like, you know, based on the way the game was going, you know, you're sort of half composing a halftime tweet going, wow, that's as well as we played all season. And then they score and you go, well, I'm not sending that now. But, you know, the rest of it is still true in terms of how we performed and how we played.
No, I felt the same. And I, you know, we do tend to grow into games. And one thing that's interesting is given how many players played on Thursday and then again today, and the fact that the fixture list has been quite relentless over the past few weeks, is that I didn't really feel we looked tired at any stage today. I felt we looked, you know, fitter and stronger. And I know it's early in the season, but it does feel like whatever it is that Darren Burgess is doing there, the conditioning of the players, you know, they really met the challenge really well. And as the second half wore on, I know we had fresh legs from the bench, but, you know, we just looked almost stronger and stronger. Yeah. And I think that also speaks to Emery's squad management. I think he's played it really cleverly and really well in the last few weeks. You know, he's had the Carabao Cup and the Europa League. He's maybe not rested as many as people expected or wanted in those games, but what he's done is he's managed to balance his team, I think, quite well on all occasions. And I think we're now approaching a point where people who were out in the cold a few weeks ago, you know, hadn't started hardly a single game, people like Danny Welbeck, are now feeling like an important part of the squad. And yeah, he's kind of expanded his roster of players from 11 to sort of 15 or 16. You know, Rob Holding is another one. Bernd Leno, albeit to an extent by necessity.
Alex Iwobi.
Alex Iwobi. These players who've come in from the outside of what had been the starting 11 and are now playing major roles. And it feels like he's getting to grips, not just now with the first team, but with a group of about 15 or 16 players that he can rely upon. And that's a real strength too, because we're going to need that over the course of the campaign.
I think what was interesting to me watching this game was that it reminded me of that spell in the Chelsea game. Remember where we found a lot of space with the fullbacks. Mm. It was the right fullback. It was usually Bellerin and Mkhitaryan. And this time it was down the left-hand side, whether it was Welbeck getting down there, Iwobi or Monreal overlapping. We had a lot of success down that left-hand side, cutting the ball back, which Fulham dealt with until they didn't. But, you know, there was something to really like about the way that we were able to find that space. We had the energy to get in behind. It felt tactical in a way, in the way that it did against Chelsea, where you were looking at it going, OK, we can really see what he's trying to do here. He's trying to pull the fullbacks and then, you know, get the balls in around the penalty spot or to the edge of the six-yard box and see who's there. You know, we could have scored a number of times before we actually did. And it was that kind of a move that opened the scoring. Lacazette on the end of a pass from Monreal, who got a pass from Iwobi, you know, who'd driven down that left-hand side. Fantastic touch and finish from Lacazette.
Yeah, and it's funny, isn't it? We've said a couple of times in recent weeks, maybe his first touch isn't always what you would hope it to be, but this was the perfect first touch and a brilliant spin and finish. I think everybody kind of assumed, probably including the goalkeeper, he might go to the far corner there, but drilled it into the near post. And, you know, that combination between not just Iwobi and Monreal, but Welbeck too on that left-hand side gave us a real threat on that wing. And actually, one of the things that's been a bit of an issue for this team going forward in recent weeks has been the wide combinations not quite clicking, you know, with Aubameyang and Ozil out there, but perhaps not looking too natural. But in this game, we had Iwobi and Monreal on the left and Mkhitaryan and Bellerin, who, you know, were so key to that Chelsea performance you mentioned, on the right-hand side. And it just meant that there seemed a bit more coherence about the way we attacked, you know, the way we overlapped. It made sense. And, you know, there was a point about 25 minutes in where they flashed up a stat on the screen and it was something like Fulham attempts 8, Arsenal attempts 1. And I couldn't believe it because it felt like we were the more dangerous attacking team. And actually, in the course of the game, I think Fulham had 21 efforts on goal to our 9. But it was the quality of the chances we created. Yeah. And the reason, you know, it's one of those things where stats can be a bit misleading, because even though we weren't getting shots off, we were getting players into really dangerous positions in the final third. And there were a few cutbacks before that Lacazette goal, like you mentioned, that could have been goals, you know, if they'd been half a yard either way. So it was a really promising attacking performance. And it's funny, isn't it? Without Aubameyang, without Ozil, it clicked. It seemed to make a bit more sense, which is kind of what we've been seeing in recent weeks.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I think the how would you brand a lot of the Fulham attempts on goal? Speculative, I
certainly
think, would be a good way of describing those. You know, it wasn't like the other games where our defence is getting pulled apart, where we've got a player clean through one-on-one with the goalkeeper, where he takes a shot, we make a save, or he doesn't control it, whatever. You know, the quality of the chances that Fulham had, I don't even know if you could call them chances. They were just attempts on goal. So they weren't particularly of high quality, and that was obvious. You know, the one that they did have was right before the halftime when we did get pulled apart a little bit, and Monreal pass was cut out, and they gave it to Schürrle, and he, you know, went through and scored. But I don't think we need to dwell on the goal that we conceded today, you know, in a game that we won 5-1. I think the focus has got to be on what we did in that second half. And, you know, for a lot of teams, and you'll hear it said on commentary and punditry, just before halftime is the worst time to concede a goal. It's a boost for the team that has just scored, because you're all of a sudden you're back in the game. You know you've damaged perhaps the morale of the team that you're playing against. You've just scored. The response that we showed in that second half, I know there was a late flurry of goals, but we came out. What minute was the second Lacazette goal? I should look at the live
block here. I was just about to check. It must have been pretty sharpish. 49 minutes, apparently.
49, so. Yeah. I have it here on the live blog. It was just after, actually, Hector Bellerin made the keeper save a very good shot.
That was a fantastic save, wasn't it?
It really was. It really was a really great save. And I think when we're talking about saves, there was one very early on, wasn't there, from Leno, who made a really, really fine save, because it was the opening two or three minutes. Yeah, it was deflected. He put his hand up and put it just around the post, you know, and so moments like that, you know, people talk about the goalkeeper saving you 12 or 15 points a season, whatever it is. But what they can do is they can not change the trajectory of a game, but prevent the trajectory of a game changing, right? Because if Fulham go 1-0 up after two or three minutes, you know, who knows, you know, the way that things go with players. So it was a fantastic save from him, and I think he's come in and done very well since Cech picked up his injury, so some credit to him. But Lacazette, you know, he's a confident player. You can see that this guy that's playing this season is a lot different from the Lacazette that played last season, I think, just in terms of how he feels about his place in the team, his place in the squad. You know, he obviously feels a bit more at home because he's been there a year. You know, he went over, he celebrated the first goal, didn't he, with Aubameyang. You know, there's a feeling within the squad that maybe we haven't seen for quite a while.
Yeah, and I don't think that was only evident in that moment with Aubameyang. I mean, I think it was after the fifth goal, there was a huddle of players and, you know, Xhaka was kind of leading it. He was captain on the day. And you could just see the camaraderie. And again, at full time, you know, there was clips of Aubameyang and Lacazette and Guendouzi having a laugh, you know, enjoying it. And it does feel like the mood at the club has changed dramatically. I mean, 9 consecutive wins, which is what we have, will do that for you.
When is the last time we won 9 in a row? It might have been the start of the... Was it the season when we bought Mesut Ozil? Remember we lost that game to... we lost the game to Aston Villa at the start of the season and everyone went mental because we had only bought Flamini. And it all felt terribly wrong. And then we bought Mesut Ozil. But I think around that time we went on maybe a 10-game, 11-game winning run. As a not a response to bringing in Ozil, but it was back then. That's the last time I can really remember us going on that kind of a run. So
I think November 2017.
Right.
Oh no, sorry, that was Man City.
That's a completely different team.
It was an article that came out. I'm desperately trying to Google it, but I can't find anything. I mean, no, I can't remember it, that's for sure. And that, you know, of course, results help. And Emery has spoken, as much as he's spoken about performances and about style of play, he has spoken about wanting to introduce a winning mentality. And you can't knock him. I mean, after the first 2 games, which were kind of a nightmare start in some respects, they really have responded brilliantly. And the results have been very good. And this was a day where the performance match the result.
Absolutely.
You know, they're both as good as each other.
Yeah.
But just to come back to that Lacazette goal, brilliant hit. You know, he's such a great striker of the ball. We've seen that on several occasions already this season. He hits it so well. Arsene Wenger would probably say he's got small feet or something like that. Small feet, no backlift. But he really does, you know, get some power there. And when you least expect it sometimes. And interesting as well, it was a flicked-on header from Danny Welbeck.
Yeah.
I think I spoke after the last game about how he gives you that option. You know, we haven't really got a striker apart from him who you'd back to win a header, you know, with a defender backing into him. So I think that's a nice option to have, and they combine well. But it's a great hit, and I think he just caught the keeper a bit off guard there.
Yeah, they were talking on BT, weren't they, about how, the keeper, a bit of a howler from the keeper. I don't think it was.
I thought that was harsh.
I thought that was really harsh. You know, he did well, I think, to get a hand to it. It's one of those where when you see a keeper get a hand to a shot, you go, he probably should have done better there. But that's us just being used to Ospina. You know, sometimes the shot is really good and really into the bottom corner. You know, he hit it early, he hit it hard, it bounced. So I wouldn't put too much blame on the keeper there. I'd like to give the credit for that goal to Lacazette. So we're 2-1 up, and then we make a couple of substitutions. Welbeck came off for Aubameyang. He didn't look that happy, did he, Danny Welbeck, at coming off?
Apparently he had some sort of injury. He was running a little bit limp just before it. And yeah, I'm not sure it was particularly serious because I don't think he went down the tunnel, but there was an injury involved. So that might explain his
That
reaction.
Might be why he was unhappy, all right, yeah. Okay, well then, fine. That's fine.
And Aaron Ramsey, of course, came on as well.
Well, yeah, Ramsey came on for, was it Iwobi?
I think it would have been Iwobi, yeah.
I thought it would have been Mkhitaryan, to be honest. I was expecting it to be Mkhitaryan because he had been somewhat ineffective up to that point. But, you know, he was fresh at least. And I think, you know, keeping him on was actually quite sensible because he was fresh. And in the final stages of the game, he played pretty well. Let's talk about this. I'm just going back through the results here. I'm going back to 2013-14. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 in a row. 3, 3, 3, 3. And actually, we won 10 in a row. One of them was a Capital One Cup game against West Brom, and I think we won on penalties. So that was 10 in a row. So that was at the start of September, August 21st, 2013, through to October the 1st, 2013. And after that, we drew to Napoli. But that was our last significant winning run to match the one that we're on at this moment in time. Right. The third goal.
A thing of beauty.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It was fucking... I watched it at the time and went, oh, wow. that's a good goal. And then I watched the replay of it. Like, okay, Schürrle overruns the ball. Bellerin plays it to Ramsey. Ramsey to Lacazette. And then he calls for the ball back. You can actually hear him on the commentary. He's calling, Laka, Laka. He calls for it, gets it back, does this little kind of, I don't know, dinky
jump.
Dinks
it over a guy. Yeah.
I mean,
bear in mind, he's starting in the right back position here, isn't he? You know, we can't emphasise that enough. He is defending his own goal. I think he's almost adjacent with the penalty area when this move sort of kicks off, Ramsey.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so he does that little flick into Lacazette, little sort of chips it over the defender.
Yeah.
Lacazette hits it on the volley to Bellerin, who backheels it onto Ramsey's head.
I'm watching it here. Here's the flick. Okay, volleys over to Bellerin. Bellerin back flick to Ramsey. A header, the second header into Mkhitaryan, who swivels, plays it in behind. There's Aubameyang to Ramsey and the finish. Holy fuck. That is an amazing goal. That really is. If there's a better team goal scored in the Premier League this season, I would be very, very surprised. Because
I've forgotten that Ramsey at one point does two headers in a row in the middle of the park, you know, because he's trying to keep the thing under control and manages to do it. And Mkhitaryan, I know he said he was quite quiet, but the left-footed pass he plays on the spin to perfectly get it into Aubameyang's path is brilliant. Mm. The cross off Aubameyang's left foot is good. In fact, it's three players in the final three touches using their wrong foot to such perfect elegance. So it's Mkhitaryan's through ball,
left
Aubameyang's cross, and then Ramsey's flick, all left-footed.
Oh, I mean, Jesus. Oh, it's
good. A sensational goal.
Oh, my God. It really is just... I'm just watching all the replays here again, and... Oh, my God. Oh, the flick is... I mean, look, you know, Ramsey, I know he frustrates people, but that's what he can give you. You know, those moments where you think a finish is not possible, and somehow he drags out. Like the goal he scored at White Hart Lane a few years ago, remember? Have you seen Emery? There's a brilliant replay of Emery on the sideline when the goal goes in, and he's actually... It's like all of the players are his sons, who have all combined to score the goal. He's so happy about it. It's just, it's an amazing piece of football. You know, from the right back position, right by our goal line all the way through. It's fucking brilliant.
I think there's another clip of him. I can't find it now, but it shows his response during the build-up as well. So, because I think he probably loved what went on down in that right-back area almost as much as he loved what happened in the final third. He's all about that playing out from the back, and it paying off like that is such reward for him and his methods.
Yeah.
You're right about Ramsey. I mean, you mentioned that goal. Of course, there was the one last season, wasn't there? The kind of scorpion backheel.
Yeah.
You know, the touch that he produced a couple of weeks ago at the Emirates Stadium for Aubameyang to score, wasn't it, at the far post, little back flick. You know, we know he's got that in his locker, and it's a real conundrum now, I think, what you do with Ramsey and what the situation is. I know there was some talk about his celebration. Was his celebration, you know, somehow indicative of the contractual situation because he kind of puts his hands out? I think it's probably more about the goal, to be honest with you, but... you know, he didn't start this game. It'll be fascinating to see, won't it, what role he plays between now and January, given what's gone on.
Yeah, it will. And, you know, this is why I think when people say Ramsey should be left with the reserves or we should never play him or anything else, you know, it's ludicrous. You know, I can understand the point of view where, okay, if he's not going to sign, then you have to perhaps... I don't mean marginalize him, but you have to consider the fact that you're going to need to go in a different direction. But to completely and utterly decide that Ramsey's talents are not useful in any way for this football team is absurd to me. It's just crazy. You know, he's a guy who can make a difference, who can score a goal like that. And today it was at 2-1, and it made it 3-1, and we went on to make it 5-1. But it could just as easily have been the goal that made it 1-0. You know, this is the quality that he has. I don't know if you know, there's any way back for this. I did hear some whispers that perhaps they might start negotiating again, maybe. But we'll just have to wait and see. But if you're Unai Emery and you're picking a team, or you're picking your 18 to play a game, whether it's against Fulham or whether it's against Manchester United or Manchester City or whoever, you know, I don't think you can do it without Aaron Ramsey. You know, just because he's got that quality to give you something in a game, even if he's being used as a sub.
Well, in some ways, especially. I mean, you know, even if you can't find room for him in whatever tactical setup you have to start the match, what an extraordinary weapon to have in your arsenal to come on. You know, I mean, he's so good late on in games because he's got that fitness, he's got that energy, he can make such a big impact. We saw that today against Fulham. I think casting him aside and, you know, leaving him to rot, as some people suggest, I just don't think that's realistic. I don't think it's an option.
No.
And I don't know if he'll be here beyond January, but until January, you know, he's got to be considered as part of the squad, and he showed that and underlined his quality today. I mean, it was a brilliant goal. The only shame is it wasn't at the Emirates Stadium, because then you would have had those wonderful gasps from the crowd on the replay.
Yeah. Well, look, I think it's good as well that we can score one like that away from the Emirates as well. You know, they have been at the Emirates, haven't
they?
Those are the Wilshire against Norwich and the Rzitski. Who was the Rzitski goal against Sunderland, maybe, was it?
Or maybe, I forget. But
I can't quite remember. But, you know, those goals have come at the Emirates. So, okay, so Mkhitaryan gets a bit more involved for the fourth goal, crosses it for Bellerin. Well, a crossfield pass to Bellerin, who finds Aubameyang at the near post. Maybe this one, actually, the keeper could have done a little bit better with, but, you know, it was a good turn and finish. Quite reminiscent of Lacazette's goal.
Very reminiscent, very reminiscent. I'm just watching it again now. It's a very good ball from Mkhitaryan. You know, we're used to him linking up with Bellerin, but not quite like that, you know, all the way across the field. But the touch from Aubameyang, much like Lacazette's goal, is what makes it. You know, it's the fact that he's able to kill the ball, trap it with his right, and then finish off his left. Obviously, we'll get on to his second goal, but I mean, you know, anyone who was thinking, well, maybe he's having a slow start to the season, you know, is he quite what we hoped? I mean, I thought this cameo really showed what he's all about, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It did. Look, he came on and he did what his mate did. He scored twice, you know, and I think that's a really healthy part of what's going on here. I saw you talk on Twitter about the fifth goal, as maybe an example of what Unai Emery is trying to get this team to do, because it begins with a short kick out and we play it around at the back, and then they put us under some pressure and we keep it, and then there's a little bit of stat padding passing, isn't there, between Xhaka and Mustafi. They just kind of play you know, when you're winning like 2-1 on FIFA and you just pass it back to, you know, your two centre halves or your centre half and your fullback. But then they kept the ball, moved it to Xhaka, into Ramsey. Ramsey's ball through to Aubameyang was fantastic. And that's the kind of goal that you expect Aubameyang to score, isn't it? Straight through on goal. The finish was fantastic. He made it look really easy. But just great movement, great pace, great strength, and a fantastic finish. And that's the kind of centre-forwards goal that he's been scoring his whole career.
Yeah, I loved the finish. It was one of those, it was almost the Nicolas Anelka finish, wasn't it? You know, across the goalkeeper from that right-hand side. And look, it's against the Fulham side who were tired, a bit despondent. But that move, it does go right back to the goalkeeper, and it does involve some really nice passages of play, particularly from Granit Xhaka. He shows his value in it, you know, with a really nice vertical pass to kind of, I think, release it is Ramsey who sets up Aubameyang.
Yeah.
And Aubameyang and Lacazette, two shots each, two goals. I mean,
can't argue.
We have been very clinical this season. You can't argue with that at all.
Yeah, no, not at all. So 5-1, and probably better than any of us would have expected when we looked at this fixture, and we looked at the context of this fixture and the circumstances, you know, having that Europa League game away from home, all that travel, Mesut Ozil, people talking before the game, you know, oh, well, look, he's got a back spasm. What a ridiculous idea it was to bring him to Azerbaijan, which you can get, but maybe it showed that this is the kind of game that we can cope without Mesut Ozil. I don't want to make this, by the way, into something like one of those things, well, Ozil wasn't there, so all of a sudden we were great, which is complete nonsense. You know, that's not where I'm going with this at all, but it just showed perhaps that as a squad, you know, we're able to cope with with a key player or a big player being injured, there is plenty of attacking depth in this squad. And I think it was a really impressive performance, really impressive result. And as I said at the very start, I think this is the kind of result that not only is it a step forward in terms of how we play, but I think it really will instill a bit more belief in the players, because they can talk all they want about, yeah, look, we know we haven't been playing well. Socrates was talking during the week, wasn't he, after the Karabakh game, you know, we were lucky to keep a clean sheet. We were, you know, so they're aware of this. So I think, you know, imposing your football on a game the way that they did was really, really, really positive.
Yeah, I mean, on the telly, they were talking about it as a statement performance. And I think it is to an extent, but I think you're right. I think the main benefit is internal. I think it is for the squad. I think, you know, we saw how happy they looked afterwards. And we can see confidence coming back into players who just lacked it so desperately at times last season. I mean, take Alex Iwobi.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have the perfect game today, but some of the skills that he was attempting, you just don't know if he would have had the confidence to do that six months ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And to be honest, sometimes it came off and it was pretty beautiful when it did. He looks like a, you know, almost a different kind of player to what we anticipated. And I think defensively, there was a lot to be encouraged about in this game. I was really worried about what Mitrovic might offer. You know, he's the kind of striker who has given us problems in the past. In fact, he himself has given us problems in the past. And yet, I thought we managed that really very well on the day. And, you know, I'm always quick to criticise Shkodran Mustafi when he messes up. But I thought defensively, this was a much better performance from him.
Yeah, no, true. Credit where it's due. You know, he was better defensively. It was weirdly low pass completion rate. I was checking that. It was only 68% of his passes were completed.
I saw that.
Yeah, which is unusual for him. But, you know, he did. I think there were the measure of his performance was quite early on. They put in a dangerous ball across from their right-hand side, which came in towards Mitrovic, and Mustafi was alert. He was there. He made the interception, the tackle in the box that he needed to make. So, you know, fair play. He played well. I thought Rob Holding, again, you know, I think what we're looking at here maybe is some of the younger players are really, really benefiting from Unai Emery and the way that he's working them. I think Bellerin, I've said it before, that Bellerin this season is consistent. Iwobi is consistent. Mm. Rob Holding has come in. He's been consistent. You know, he's whether he's giving them the confidence or whatever it is, the younger players are responding to the tutelage of Emery and the coaches that he has at the club. I think that's a really positive part of what's happening, because when you look at the 29-year-olds, the Ozils, the Aubameyangs, the Mkhitaryans, even though we've only got one of each, and that kind of phraseology always makes me a bit weird, but you know what I mean? Those guys who you have an expectation that they can perform week in, week out. Ramsey, whatever, Socrates. But the young players providing consistency and stepping up and feeling confident. You can see it in Iwobi, can't you? Like, if something doesn't work for Iwobi this season, it's like, oh, well, I'll just go again. I'll work hard. I'll get the ball back and I'll try it again. Whereas last season,
yes,
it didn't quite work the same way.
No, and actually, if you look at the passing stats, Iwobi's numbers weren't great either. You know, I think he had about 70% completion. To be fair, that's not unusual for a wide player.
Yeah.
But one thing that struck me is that our passing numbers were generally worse than they have been in other games. And I think that's partly because we were playing more directly than we have. You know, there was not any passive possession really in this game until, like you mentioned, the last couple of minutes when we were padding our stats. Until then, we were looking quite direct. And, you know, we'd play it short at the back, but then we'd look for Welbeck relatively early. And it, you know, we reaped the dividends of that. It was very effective. There was a lot more thrust to our attacking play.
Mm.
And that incurred an element of risk and meant that some of the passing numbers weren't as pretty as they sometimes are. But it made us a hell of a lot better to watch and a hell of a lot more fun going forward. I think the young players' point is a really good one. And something that I've thought in the past week as well is that actually, you know, we spoke in the summer about the signings and we weren't sure necessarily about the quality of the players that we bought. But, you know, at this point, granted it's only October, but you look at the contributions being made by the likes of Torreira, Socrates, Leno, Guendouzi, and you have to say, you know, in terms of what we spent and what we appear to be getting from them, we haven't done too badly at all.
No, not at all. And when you look at the league table, it's a very nice looking league table, isn't it? I know Man City and Liverpool played out a 0-0 draw a bit earlier on, thanks to Riyad Mahrez. Well done to you, mate. Cracking the penalty over the bar there. But, you know, we're in fourth position. We're on 18 points. Liverpool are on 20. Chelsea are on 20. Man City are on 20. Like, after the first two games of the season, if someone had offered you that, you'd have bit their hand off.
Well, bear in mind, based on our performance, I think there's a very real chance we should have taken something at Chelsea.
Yeah.
At least a draw, and then imagine what that would do to the table. I mean, crucially as well, our goal difference in this game took us above Spurs, which is a lovely thing just ahead of the international break.
Yes, it really is, because, you know, fuck Spurs. So, yeah, we go into the interlull, we go into it off the back of a win, off the back of six successive Premier League wins. And considering the way the season started, I don't think we could ask for a great deal more. You know, if it had been another one of those wins, James, where, you know, we'd won and kept a clean sheet, but we had been suspect defensively, I think I would have been obviously been happy, but I think I would have been a little bit more worried than I am. You know, I think we all like to see some signs of progression. And the fact, or some evidence that things are being learned, lessons are being learned along the way. And maybe it's because it was just Fulham, but, you know, it was also just Cardiff, it was also just Newcastle, you know. So I think there was progression today, both in terms of how we played from an attacking point of view, but specifically from a defensive point of view. I think that's nearly the most pleasing thing, nearly, but not quite, because the third goal was the most pleasing thing for me.
Yeah, I think that's a fair summary. Shall we call that part one?
We will call that part one. We'll come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnerblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArsblog. Just want to remind people that if you like what we do here on Arsblog, you want to support us and help us to keep all this beautiful content we make free, then you can sign up to be an Arsblog member on Patreon, patreon.com/Arsblog. And in return, you get extra content, super duper extra content for just €5 a month, plus VAT if you're in the EU. If you're not in the EU, you don't have to worry about VAT. You won't have to worry about it in a few months, James, but that's neither here nor there. But we do have some good stuff up there. If you like video games, I talked to Danny O'Dwyer, who makes documentaries about video games, such as Fallout, Rocket League, and all that. And we've got a Champions League special and other stuff coming up during the month. So sign up if you like. patreon.com/arsblog. Right.
I enjoyed that Champions League one, by the way, looking back at the 2005-06 campaign.
It was much more fun to record than I thought it was going to be. You know, because
I was hesitant to listen to it because obviously the final has such painful memories.
It does, but like the actual run to the Champions League, And actually, the day of the final itself and everything else was fantastic. The result of the final, not so good, obviously. But there were a lot of great memories during that Champions League season. You know, you think about Jens Lehmann against Real Madrid, that brilliant save from Raul, Vieira getting tackled by Robert Pires, you know, going to the Bernabeu, going and beating Juventus at Highbury, and then, you know, holding a clean sheet with that back four. All of it was tremendous fun. And the squirrel, of course.
Of course. How could we forget? So that's one definitely worth checking out if you are a Patreon member. And if you're not, become one. And then you can.
You can.
Shall I do the first question?
Yeah, why don't you?
Why not? I know it sounds presumptuous of me, but
don't just sit in your arse. Just, you know, do a question.
So, well, we've had a lot of variants on this about the formation, you know. And John, who's at When John Tweet, says, we've tried several formations across different competitions. Which one is your favourite right now? And who is / are your strikers?
See, I'm very much a 4-4-2 guy, perhaps because I'm old and everything else. But, you know, I've always had a hankering for a good old 4-4-2, you know, and I know that we've played variants of that down the years with Arsene Wenger. You know, you couldn't necessarily say you were playing a 4-4-2 with Mark Overmars, for example, because, you know, he was sort of part of the four, but he was also part of the two. And the other parts of the four were like, ah, oh, for fuck's sake, where's Over? Oh, look, he's just scored. Okay, I guess. But, yeah, I kind of like the idea of a 4-4-2. In the sense that it's like a bit of a throwback. I guess it'd be like going to a party and everyone's, you know, drinking SodaStream drinks. Were you alive for SodaStream?
No, I'm not, but I'm aware of it. You know, I'm sort of culturally aware of it. It's before my time. But I was alive, probably, but I wasn't at parties. Well, the parties I were at were probably very different.
They were so different.
Yeah.
Oh, the SodaStream parties, man. You missed out, honestly. The SodaStream years, they talk about like the swinging 60s and everything else. The SodaStream years, oh,
I know. The SodaStream generation, I just missed out on it.
We could make our own cola.
But, you know, we've used three formations in a week, haven't we? I mean, you know, it's three at the back in Europe.
I didn't necessarily like that.
No, I mean, it was interesting, but we didn't look the most comfortable with it, perhaps because we haven't really done it for a while. I felt like that was almost like we had to play that to get Kolasinac in. Do you know what I mean? Because he's so dodgy as a left back, but quite good as a wing back. Nevertheless, the 4-4-2, I liked it. I'm not convinced. You know, I think we had another question. Let me have a look now. Puneet Verma said, is 4-4-2 here to stay, even against the bigger opposition?
No.
I'm not sure that it is, to be honest with you.
No.
But Fulham, you know, it made sense to play it today, partly because they are weak defensively, so it enabled us to kind of target that. Partly because they lined up with a back three. I don't know if Emery knew they were going to do that, but it, you know, having two strikers against three centre halves maybe is a bit smarter than leaving Lacazette up there to fend for himself. But I'm not looking at it and thinking, well, that's it now. We're a 4-4-2 team indefinitely.
Yeah.
I think Emery strikes me as the kind of coach who is going to sort of mix and match, you know, as he goes.
Yeah, was this maybe the first game where you thought, okay, he's definitely chosen a formation specifically for this game? Rather than like trying to say, okay, I'm getting to know my players, let's play this formation that I like to play and see how they work within that. Today felt a little bit more like, okay, I know what they all can do, I know what their qualities are or their talents are, let's play like this because I think they're going to play like that. It just felt a bit like that to me.
I know what you mean. I mean, I think I've mentioned this before, but I think maybe the City game is slightly the exception. You know, I felt like that was a team that was very tailored to that opposition. But this felt like he took a risk, but he felt comfortable to take that risk because he knew the players. I mean, 4-4-2, we haven't really played a pure 4-4-2 apart from that one pre-season game where it was Lacazette alongside Nketiah. You know, we haven't played it for a really long time, and certainly not under Emery. So it was a bit of a gamble, but I guess you're right. I guess he felt he knew the players well enough, knew their strengths, knew their weaknesses, knew where they'd be comfortable to pull it off. And, you know, what the reason we haven't been able to play a 4-4-2 under Arsene Wenger, I think, is that we haven't had the central midfield partnership to sustain it, to support it. And what we're all hoping is that Xhaka and Torreira can be that central, or, you know, Torreira plus one can be that central midfield partnership. And today it was, but I don't think it's going to be 4-4-2, you know, forever. But I would like to see it. I'd like to see it more often. And I'd like to see it for 90 minutes with Aubameyang and Lacazette from the start. I'd really like to see that.
Yeah, I would too. Speaking of Torreira, we have a couple of questions on him. First and foremost, Tommy Heatley, who's at Gunnar Gom, says he loves the fact that the Vieira song changed to Torreira. He said, if you both sing it on the pod, this check for €20 will be sent to the Peter McVerry Trust in Dublin, a great charity here in Ireland. Hope it's not too late. So he wants us to sing the Torreira song. But this is a charity for homeless people. And I feel like he should make that donation anyway, whether or not we sing the song.
Right. Does that mean you're not going to sing the song?
It's probably not going to sing. Well, I mean, he comes
I'll
from Uruguay.
Yeah.
He's only five foot high.
Woo! Great. I mean, I thought it was going to be some variant of rhyming with Unai. You know, that seemed like, you know, he came from Uruguay to play, you know.
Under Unai.
Yeah, whatever. But 5 foot high is great. And it means if something, you know, terrible happens and we lose Emery to, I don't know, Real Madrid or something in the future, we can keep that song. Do you know what I mean? It's good to have a contingency.
Yes. Yes, it is good to have a contingency. The other question I have here is from Heisenberg, who's at _Heisenberg_. And he says, who is the best holding midfielder in the league and why is it Lucas Torreira?
Look, he looks like a real find. And it's amazing how a player who I hold my hands up, I had never heard of prior to this summer. I had no real awareness of him. Couldn't have picked him out of a lineup. It's amazing how he can come in and have such an impact. And, you know, he's not even been in the starting 11 that long, but he does seem to tick so many boxes of the kind of midfielder we've been after for such a long time. And when you look at the Premier League, you know, there are some good holding midfielders out there. You know, I think Fernandinho is actually very, very good at what he does. I think Kante is brilliant at what he does. But if he can get close to those guys, you know, then we've got some player. And crucially, it's about partnerships as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he seems to fit very well next to Xhaka.
Yeah, I saw somebody say that he won all of his aerial duels today. I saw that stat doing the rounds. I don't know how many, but he won them all. Could have been one, 100%. He won actually 10,000% of his aerial duels. But yeah, look, like we said in the first half of the show, he's somebody who's bringing things to our midfield that our midfield has needed for quite some time. So yeah, look, may he live long and prosper, our little Uruguayan Ferengi.
Yeah, I mean, maybe all his aerial duels were against John Serri, who, to be fair, is sort of one of the few Premier League
midfielders. Small as well, isn't
he? About as small as him, yeah.
But is that a trend? Is it a growing trend in football that, you know, guys of the size of Kante, Torreira, Serri, like you say, are having success in that position? I know Makélélé did it and got the position named after him. But, you know, generally speaking, people had this vision of, you know, the guy who's going to play in that position is going to be a shield for the back four. He's going to be big and strong and, you know, all that kind
of
stuff.
More of a Matic type, yeah. Well, I think, you know, to an extent, Barcelona kind of initiated that, didn't they, 10, 15 years ago with their central midfield trio, who were all pretty diminutive. But, you know, I think the advantage of someone like of Torreira, you know, his size is quite helpful to him. He's got a low centre of gravity. He's short, but he's still quite broad. You know, he's still quite stocky. He's difficult to knock off the ball. And he actually is pretty decent in the aerial challenges. He's got a habit of, even when he can't win the header, he can kind of put the other guy off enough to make sure he doesn't really do anything useful with it. So, yeah, look, it's been a really strong start. And he goes away. I think he's travelling somewhere ridiculous, isn't he, in this international break? He's going to Asia or something like that.
What the hell are Uruguay playing in Asia for?
I can't remember. I seem to remember Emery saying that. Should we look that up?
South Korea.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's got
then Japan.
Couple of big flights. Yeah. So he's got a lot of travelling to do in this break. So let's hope he comes back and comes through it unscathed.
Yeah. But you know what the thing is? Yeah, the thing is, though, even if Uruguay are cheapskates and they go with an economy budget airline, Torreira's going to have loads of legroom anyway.
That's true.
He's just so tiny.
He doesn't need to upgrade to the fire escape seats,
exactly.
Which always worry me because I don't want the responsibility for opening that door in an emergency.
Yeah, no, look, none of us do. But look, if he gets tired, he can just slip into the, you know, the little basket on the back of the seat. He can just curl up in there with the magazine and the sick bag.
You know, exactly.
Where's Lucas? Has anyone seen him? Look, he's just in here. Just snoozing away in the little backseat basket thing. Yeah, look.
In the pouch thing.
In the pouch, yeah, like a little Uruguayan kangaroo. It's amazing. Okay, I've got a question here before you have another question.
Oh, go on then.
This one comes from BV Boy, and we had many questions like this. Many, many, many questions along this line. And he is at Spomeard on Twitter. I'm probably saying that wrong. You probably should say S-P-O-M-E-A-R-D. I don't know, whatever it is. But he says, is it really on, or are they just teasing us?
Yeah, well, it depends what the it is. Do you know what I mean?
I think it means the title, because we're only two points off the top.
Okay. I'm not sure it's on. Is that sort of, am I bringing anybody down by saying that? I don't even really dare to dream. Is that... how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I don't think it's on. I don't think the title is on at all. But...
I think the top four is a lot more on than I thought it was going to be.
Same. I think, you know, we have shown a measure of character and resilience in these six Premier League games that we've won in the last little while. Which would lead me to be a bit more confident about our ability for it, if it is the top four, to be well and truly on, you know?
Yes.
And I think as well, the other part of it is that I've completely forgotten what the other part is. What was I saying?
I don't know.
I got completely distracted by a text message there.
Oh, okay. Is it anything interesting?
No, it's all about how we're having some server problems with Arsblog News, and Tom has just texted me with something that he thinks it might be, or, you know, I'm only reading the snippet of the text on the front of my phone. You know that one?
Right, okay. Tantalizing.
What were we actually saying?
What I was going to say is that I don't think it is on in terms of the title. And I remember, before I forget,
I just think we've got a bit more depth than some of the others.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, I just think we, you know, if you look at our squad compared to Tottenham, for example, you know, they're very, very reliant on a number of players, a key number of players. And I think what we've seen from this squad this season is that we're able to score throughout the squad. We're spreading the goals around. And I don't think we're necessarily... like, if Harry Kane, for example... and I'm not saying I want this to happen. But let's say Harry Kane, if he's gone out tonight to pick up a pizza at his local pizza parlor, and some guys come along like the nihilists in The Big Lebowski, and they set upon him with some iron bars... and they bash his knee as if he was Nancy Kerrigan and they were Tonya Harding. There's an old Olympics reference for many of you out there.
For the SodaStream generation.
For the SodaStream generation, for sure. Like, if that were to happen to Tottenham, I think they'd be fucked.
Sure.
But I don't think we'd be necessarily fucked if the same thing happened to Aubameyang, for example.
Well, we've got Lacazette.
Yeah. And we've got Welbeck.
Better than Llorente, you know, or whoever else they've got.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I mean, and what I was going to say about it being on or not is that I'm enjoying watching Arsenal a lot this season, a lot more than I have done in recent years. And I wonder how much of that is to do with my own slightly reduced expectations, maybe.
Mm.
And if I was to start viewing this as a title-chasing season, I fear that... you know, I'd be setting myself up for disappointment. So I don't necessarily want to move the goalposts in October because I think, you know, we're all aiming for top four. I think most fans agree that that's what we should be looking at. And if you do see it from that perspective, it's going rather well.
Mm.
I've got a question here. This is from Sean, who's at brave_Arsenal. And what with it being 2 months into the Unai Emery era, he says, 2 months into the Unai Emery era, who has been our best player And what has been your biggest surprise?
Who's been our best player? That is a good question. I think maybe Lacazette.
I think I agree. I'm trying to think back and make sure there's no sort of bias there, sort of a recency bias, you know, in terms of what's happened in the last couple of games. But I think it has been Lacazette.
Yeah, I mean, he was left out, wasn't he, at the start? And then he got some chances. He played his way into the team and he stayed in the team. And he's scoring really important goals. And you kind of, I don't know, you look at him and you have a bit of faith in him, you know? In terms of what he can produce on the pitch. I think maybe Lacazette.
And then it was, what's been your biggest surprise?
I don't want to be negative on this. My biggest surprise is how defensively suspect we've been. But on a positive note, I think my biggest surprise, as we touched on earlier on, has been not the development, but the fact that the young players that we talked about, Holding and Bellerin and Iwobi, have come in and looked more like the players we wanted them to be under Arsene Wenger. You know, I think they're playing the way that Arsene Wenger always thought they could play, but because of everything else that was going on with Wenger and the way that the team and the message and, you know, his time was at an end. And I think we kind of have to be able to look at the performances and everything else, the players within that context, that they were all affected by that in one way or another. So I think the surprise is how quickly he's got those young players believing in themselves again, for me.
I think that's a great shout, yeah. I mean, I was thinking about surprises and, you know, something that's the thoughts that I had were about individuals, really. I think I've been pleasantly surprised by people like Alex Iwobi, Matteo Guendouzi, but you know, they kind of come under that umbrella of young players. And, you know, Arsenal became a place where people hit a ceiling.
Yeah.
And it felt like that was kind of finite. Their potential was finite. And that once they hit, you know, 20 league games, they kind of never really massively improved upon that. And now it feels like they are. It's like they're reinvigorated and suddenly their ceiling's been raised and, you know, they are making huge progress. So I think that's a great shout. That's a great shout.
Okay, here's a question from Facebook. Ben Fawcett says, I never thought I'd give a shit about the manager being passionate about us scoring, but I fucking loved it. Those are his emphasis, by the way. He put it in capitals. He said, do you care about him being outwardly passionate or not?
Do I care about it? I'm not sure I care about it. I think results are what matters, but I think two things. I think sometimes it's not just passion. I think sometimes there are instructions being relayed from the sidelines that are having some impact on games. So we had a question from James Lowe about set pieces, you know, that the assistant Juan Carcedo goes out and, you know, sort of signals what set piece we're going to do. You know, there appears to be a number of prepared routines and they are controlled from the substitutes bench. That's completely new, you know, at Arsenal, something like that. And then the second point to make is that although I don't, you know, I wouldn't not like Emery if he wasn't passionate on the touchline, I do like it. Like, I don't think it's necessarily. I don't think it's particularly important. I don't think it changes what happens on the field. But as a fan, I like it. I like to see that passion. And, you know, I think there's a sort of implicit thing there about Arsene Wenger not being passionate on the touchline, and I don't think that's entirely true. You know, we saw him be very passionate on lots of occasions, but I think by the end of his time, you know, a certain malaise had set in, and the enthusiasm of the new manager is very welcome. And I think maybe as much as it does things for the players, I think it does a lot for the fans. I think the fans take a lot from it, and I'm glad he's like that, even if I can't be sure exactly how much it influences the results, you know?
Yeah, sure. I like seeing him on the sideline. You know, there's only so much a manager can do, really, in a packed stadium. But I do like the fact that he is talking to people throughout the game. He's giving instructions. He's gesticulating. He's, you know, you can see he's really trying to get his message across to the players in key situations as well. So, you know, maybe it's a case with Arsene Wenger that they knew what he wanted at all times, whereas Emery feels like he really has to hammer home his point, perhaps. Maybe that's the thing. And look, it's a change. Like everything else, it's a change. It's something new and different. And, I remember United fans, didn't they go a bit crazy about Louis van Gaal? About how he never showed any passion on the sidelines and everything else. And he's going, look, me shouting at them from, you know, over 70, 80,000 people in a stadium, that's not the difference between winning and losing games. And you can understand that. But at the same time, it appears to be working to an extent for Emery. There's a fine line, isn't there? You start losing some games and you're doing all that in the sideline and it's like, well, look at this guy. Doesn't know what it is. He can't do anything from there. So, you know, it's all about results, and results have an impact on that perception. But yeah, I'm all right with it. I'm all right with it. I didn't fucking love it, but I was all right with it.
Sure, you weren't in caps about it.
I wasn't in caps. No, no.
What about this question from Mike Wood, who's at Mike V Wood, and I see what he's done. He's put two V's to make a W. He says, is there a way back into the starting 11 for Petr Cech now? Leno has made a big difference to our speed of play since he's come in.
I don't know if he had. Do you know what's interesting? I think Leno kicks it longer more often than Petr Cech. Would that be fair?
Yeah, it's almost like because Cech doesn't customarily do that, he's sort of been told, look, you've got to play it short. And so he's hyper-conscious of it and playing it short maybe more than is necessary. Whereas maybe Leno is sort of told, well, we know what you do, just do your thing. And he's a bit more relaxed about it and he's actually going long quite frequently.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have noticed that. I think Leno's done pretty well, all in all. I mean, I thought he was very good in the Europa League game, and he had to be, you know, because we gave away a load of chances. And I think it's going to be interesting, isn't it, after the international break, because Leno, he's done nothing to be dropped. Let's put it like that.
Yeah.
But Cech is the number one.
Yeah, it's been an opportunity for Leno to come in and show why we spent £22.5 million on him. So far, so good in that regard. He's been, he's played very well. He's made some really, really good saves. Really good saves. And I'm not saying it's because Cech is bad with the ball at his feet or anything like that, but when Leno has the ball at his feet, I don't have the, he's got the ball at his feet kind of thing that I do have with Petr Cech. You know, 9 times out of 10, Cech is fine with the ball at his feet. Just sometimes he isn't. And we haven't really seen that yet with Leno. I think there was a little mistake, wasn't there, early in the Carabao Cup game, where he let the ball run under his feet and it just sort of dribbled wide.
I think it was Carabao game, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but I think he's doing everything he can to take his chance. There's probably another few weeks, isn't there, for Cech to be out. So if he keeps this up, it's going to be quite difficult for Emery to drop him.
I think it is. Let's not forget, Cech had some really good performances before Leno came in, made some really important saves. But it's a really tricky one, isn't it? Because we've talked about this, you know, and I know they talked about this on the Arsenal Vision podcast too, about how once you drop Cech, it's very difficult to get him back. You know, he's not at an age where he's going to get many more second chances.
True.
You know, once he's out the side, he's probably out. And I think his contract's up at the end of the season. So I don't know what Emery will do, but I feel like Leno has done enough. You know, he's done almost as much as he could do, really, to make Emery's choice a difficult one.
Yeah. Which is all you can really ask, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
but Emery may feel like, you know, Leno's the man for the future, but he's performing well in the present. So why not stick with it?
You know,
if it's working now, why change it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just looking at the fixture list. When we come back, we don't actually play till the Monday, do we?
Oh, really? Oh, we've got a poxy Monday kickoff.
I know. Tell me about it. So it's a Monday kickoff against Leicester, and then Thursday against the Europa League, again in the Europa League against
right.
Sporting. So, you know, maybe he'll rotate across that week, but in what order? I just don't know.
I don't know either.
If you had to guess, we had this before. We had the Ruffles chat, didn't we? The Ruffles bet about the Man City game. What would you venture if you had to guess for, let's say, the Leicester game?
I really think it depends. Well, the Leicester game is straight after the international break.
Yeah, it's our first fixture.
And are we expecting Cech to be back? I guess we are.
Oh, good point. I mean, I would think so. I would think so. What would you do?
I think I keep Leno in. Just because he's the future, isn't he? He is the future. I really like Petr Cech, and I think he's played very well. But I think if Leno comes in, takes his chance, plays well, he's 26, he's the club record signing as a goalkeeper, what does it do to him if we drop him?
Yeah. I just don't... It's just difficult to find a justification to drop him. As good as Cech has been, I do wonder if, I would stick with Leno. Mm. I would stick with Leno. Because, you know, ultimately, I suppose if Leno does suddenly dip in form, you can bring Cech back in. Mm. You know, it's not a final decision. It's not as if Cech's had a howler and you've pulled him out of the team.
Yeah.
It's an injury.
Yeah, he's lost his place through injury. But, exactly. And he's a safety net. He's now a safety net, which is quite good. So, you know. Right, I have a question. Here it is. One second. It's from Tanner Osman, who's at 1 Tanner Osman. There's only one Tanner Osman. He says, having seen the players, how do you rate our incoming transfer business this summer? Better than you initially thought?
Yeah. I touched on that in part one, but I do. It is better than I thought. And that's because there have been some real surprises. I mean, I had no idea that Matteo Guendouzi was going to play the kind of role he's played in the first 2 months of our season.
Yeah.
I thought there was a real chance we might not even have seen him start a game at this point. You know, maybe in the Carabao Cup, something like that. So that's, of course, a huge boost. Socrates has been better than I anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm intrigued that he didn't play against Fulham.
Do you think that's because Emery is sort of managing him? You know, he is almost part of the SodaStream generation, James.
Sure.
You know.
Maybe. Maybe he is managing him and thinking, you know, Mustafi seems pretty resilient. He played a lot of football last season too, didn't he, Mustafi? He played a lot of the cup games even when other players were rested. And Holding has started 4 games in a row now. You know, I think he's getting a good look at him. He's learning a lot about Holding, Emery.
Do you think he likes what he's seeing from Holding? If he's starting in 4 games in a row, it appears to me, I think he likes what he's seeing from Rob Holding.
I think you are seeing that. And what is interesting is we are seeing relationships bloom in this Arsenal squad. We're seeing it between certain players. You know, we talked about Monreal and Iwobi, and we talked about Aubameyang and Lacazette. But I think you're also seeing the manager building trust and faith and favour in certain players. And I think Iwobi's one of them. I think Holding is another. I think, funnily enough, I think Danny Welbeck is becoming one.
Yeah.
You can see the manager kind of almost falling for certain players. You know, it is kind of a bromance thing.
Yeah.
And I think Holding fits the bill, really. I mean, his passing was at times a little bit too risky, I thought, against Fulham. He took a couple of unnecessary risks, but... Yeah. He is a good ball player, you know, and I think he senses an opportunity and he's seizing it. So, I've been impressed with Holding. Coming back to the question, I think Leno, you know, he's not committed at any howlers yet that we were warned about. He's been the good shot stopper that we were promised. Socrates, we've talked about. Torreira has been as good as we hoped he might be, I think. And Lickstiner, he's been, you know, up and down, but, you know, he's kind of been what we thought, a kind of, you know, very experienced backup. He doesn't look like a player who's going to come in and take Hector Bellerin's place.
No.
But I don't think that was ever particularly realistic at his age.
No, I don't think so. And I think maybe Bellerin is responding, perhaps part of what is making Hector Bellerin's performances so good this season is the fact that there is actually genuine competition there. You know, you can't underestimate that as well. So, okay.
And he may be learning things from Lichtsteiner as well.
Yeah. There's a bit of talk about how Lichtsteiner's a good guy in the training ground. So, all right. Is it my question or your question?
I think it's probably mine, but I am sort of out of mine, to be honest.
You're terrible. Okay. All right. This one comes from the Chief, who's at macho_grande1. He says, if you could only go for one in January, which would you pick, centre back or winger?
Great question. I would have said...
Wow.
I think I would have said winger, I think, but... Mm. The form of Alex Iwobi has maybe slightly reconsidered that. Centre-back, arguably, we are getting a centre-back potentially back in January, aren't we? In the form of Laurent Koscielny.
Yeah.
Whatever kind of shape he's in. It's a very tricky one, you know. I think I'm going to say... Oh, I don't know, actually.
Go on.
I'm going to say centre-back.
All right.
I'm going to say centre-back. Because if you said to me, I can get you a really elite player in one of those two positions, you know, a top of the range, I would say centre-back. Because sooner or later, looking at the age of Koscielny, looking at the age of Sokratis, looking at the age of Monreal to an extent, we're going to need a top defender in his prime to carry this defence. So I'd say that.
Yeah, I would go with you on that. I would agree with that. And I'd also say that part of the reason I would say that is because if you're talking about buying a winger, you got to look at what Reece Nelson is doing. He scored again for Hoffenheim today.
I saw that. Yeah. Nice little finish from Nelson.
So, you know, he's a player who we've given a long-term contract to, who can play, you would assume, on the left or the right of a front three or behind, you know, even maybe in a 4-4-2, who knows? But, like, I think I would prefer to get a good centre-back and plump for Reece Nelson as our winger with potential.
Sure.
That's what I think.
Yeah, I think... I've spoken of my love and admiration for Wilfried Zaha on this podcast before.
You have.
But I just think that, I think centre-back, we need a long-term solution there, and it needs to be someone who's not, you know, a promising player, but someone who's ready to come in and be our starting centre-half for the next 5 years alongside Holding or whoever else.
Okay, you obviously don't have any more questions. So this is another one from Brad Dennett, who's at Bradley_Dennett. He said, after Ramsey's goal, I ended up screaming, wooing repeatedly due to the beauty of it all. My girlfriend didn't know what that noise meant and ran across the room thinking I was in mortal pain. So what are some of the best reactions you've had to celebrating a goal?
Can we just try and figure out what that noise was that was a celebration that sounded like mortal pain?
I don't know.
Like, if you say to me woo, I'd be like, woo!
Woohoo! What a goal!
But to me, that doesn't signify injury.
Yeah, I mean,
so like,
how do you do a woo that's like, it's like woo! A woo!
It's a bit like that Gary Neville goal noise. Do you remember that from Fernando Torres scoring in the Nou Camp? My best goal scoring reactions, I don't know. I always think back very fondly to, do you remember, was it in, I can't remember, it was at Highbury, Ashley Cole's diving header in the Champions League.
Yeah.
I was at Highbury, I was in the upper tier of whichever end it was, he scored that goal in, I think it was the North Bank, and I was on the aisle seat next to the steps, and when he scored it, I went on like a brilliant run down the steps that ended in me sort of nearly collapsing and tripping over, right, and then falling over into the lower tier. So that's always one that stands out for me. What about you?
I like the ones where I scare the dog.
Sure, then you know it's a good goal or an important goal if the dog's scared.
Yeah, exactly. The dog's lying there on the rug and I'm watching the match, and then all of a sudden you go, and the dog goes, woo, 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 because he thinks
somebody's... Does the dog ever join in the celebrations?
In what sense? Like, in the...
Not in like a choreographed way, like the Roberto Di Matteo pose or anything like
that. No, no, we don't have any dance moves worked out.
Sure, sure, yeah. No, I just mean like, you know, if you get excited, does he get excited too?
No, he kind of... Well, Archer, because we've got two now, I don't really know what Lana is like with football. Archer can get a bit stressed sometimes. He's quite a sensitive dog. And the last number of seasons under Arsene Wenger have left him not necessarily a fan of football, it has to be said. When football's on, he's like, I think I'm going to lie somewhere else in the house, you know.
Right.
Because for fuck's sake. He's like, oh, stop, man. Stop. No, it's all good. Just relax. So, He doesn't really join in, no, but he has, like, from time to time been scared out of his sleep by goal celebrations. I can't remember doing anything else ludicrous or ridiculous, you know? Not really.
I mean,
you
know, no. I mean, he's a dog. I mean, is Archer aware of football? Is he like, oh, it's football time now? Does he have any sense of what's going on?
Yeah, he knows the sound of football.
He
definitely knows the sound of football. And he prefers to be out of the house when football is on.
Oh, really? He doesn't like competing for your attention.
Well, it's not that. It's just there's the anger and the frustration. He doesn't deal with anger very well. He's like, come on, guy. There's no need to be angry. Don't be angry. So, no, he gets woken up sometimes, but that's as far as it goes. That's as far as it goes. Okay, I got one more.
Go on. Let's do it.
Ian Richardson. Who's that? Ian Rich LKN. He says, if you, yourself, I don't know why the yourself is in there.
It's not really necessary. Probably,
it's not really, because if he said you, like, who else would it be?
Sure, it's going to be us.
Yeah, but if you, James, yourself, if you could have scored any goal in Arsenal's history, what goal would it be and why?
Oh, wow. That's a hell of a question.
It is, isn't it?
I think I would choose... it's difficult, isn't it? Because I find myself thinking not about the type of goal, but the occasion.
Yeah, of course.
So I think I'm going to go with the Vieira goal against Leicester that completed the unbeaten season.
Whoa, you're a big glory hunter, you.
I know. I just think that's like, you know, it's a lovely goal for a start, but it's also just a sort of iconic... emblematic moment. I'm going to say that.
Okay.
What about you?
That's a good goal. I mean, I have to say, having watched you play football, I don't think you could have scored that goal.
No. He finishes it with his right foot as well, which is very unlikely for me. No chance at all.
Yeah. You're all left foot, in fairness.
Yes.
Two left
foot. If I'm anything, I'm all left foot.
For me, like you, it's an occasion. It would be Alan Sunderland's goal in the 1979 FA Cup final. Yeah. I remember very distinctly as a kid playing football in the house. You know the way none of us were ever allowed to play football in the house?
Of course, because you break things.
Yeah, you break things and things get smashed and it's loud and annoying. You can imagine a child playing football all around your house now. It'd be really, really annoying. So I apologize very belatedly to my parents. Well, my mom was the one who got really fed up with it, and she's gone a while, so, you know, what can you do? I can't make up for it now.
No, it's too late.
It's too
but
late.
It's nice that you, it's a nice thought.
It's a nice thought. But anyway, we used to have a corridor, because we lived in a hotel, right? My dad ran this hotel in Yorkshire when I was a kid. It's a castle.
You're like Jose Mourinho, living in a hotel.
Yeah, but I had no choice. He could easily go get a flat or an apartment or a house anywhere he wants.
Yeah.
He's got enough money to buy whatever he wants. He could buy his own hotel. He could buy a hotel or a castle. But anyway, the hotel was a castle, and we lived in this sort of apartment upstairs, and there was a corridor, and I used to repeatedly replicate the goals from the 1979 FA Cup final over and over again in a corridor. So you can imagine what that was like.
I mean, to be fair, that goal was one that I considered suggesting myself, and I was comfortably not alive when it was scored, which shows you know quite the impact that it
James, I was fucking, I was at the best Soda Stream parties you
I
ever
bet you
fucking
were.
Heard when that when
the Soda Streams were flowing that night.
Oh man, Studio 54 Soda Stream parties, it was all on. But anyway, it was, you know, the thing about that goal was you needed a bit of width to recreate the goal, because, you know, it was Liam Brady who took the ball from kickoff and drove down, played it to Graham Ricks. Graham Ricks crossed it to the back post for Alan Sunderland to put the ball in. Gary Bailey, Manchester United's goalkeeper, was nowhere. It takes some dexterity and skill, which I've never been able to show again in my footballing career, to replicate that goal. But that's the one I think I would choose. If it were me, Wembley, cup final day, hot day, sun shining, 100,000 people in Wembley Stadium, the old Wembley Stadium, the terraces, everything else.
The two towers.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. Beautiful.
I'd be well on for that.
Yeah, that's a great shout.
That's a good
great
shout, isn't it? Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, well, that's what I myself would have scored, and you would have scored. You would have
Let
scored
us know what you yourselves would have scored.
You, yourself, and I. Right, well, look, we're going to leave it there because that's kind of the end of it. And I hope you've enjoyed the show. And I hope you've enjoyed your Sunday watching Arsenal move into, are we third or fourth? What did I say?
Fourth. Fourth,
we are. We're fourth. But moving ahead of Tottenham, that's always a good thing. Winning 5-1, always a good thing. It's
five points clear of Man U, always a good thing.
Always a good thing. Oh, it looked like it would have been a much better weekend than it was, didn't it?
Yes, but then maybe in the long run, this is for the best, you know.
Do you think?
Stay in the job, keep poisoning them. I don't know. I hope it doesn't provoke an upsurge in their form, but I'm not massively anticipating it.
No, me neither. Me neither. Anyway, look, we can't control the other results. We can only control what we do. As ever, thanks for listening. Give us a rating or review on iTunes. That would be great. And we will catch you on the next one. Until then, take it easy. What?
Bye.
No, dude, no, do bye-bye.
Oh,
again.
No!
We fucked it up. Is that the
on,
first? That's the first one in the whole 251 episodes you fucked up. Okay.
I thought you were leaving a gap. Right, we'll do it again.
Okay, all right. Take it easy, folks. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye, bye, bye. Oh, Jesus.
Let's go while we can.
Go. All right.
Bye, bye, bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.